Inside the Cross Podcast.
Inside the Cross Podcast, contestant along with Terry Foy, as we take a look back and a look forward. Terry had the opportunity to go watch Loyola absolutely pummel Towson midweek game. I was traveling and following the game on Twitter, and I could not believe the scores that were coming through. 9-0, and it just was ugly from the start. What did you see from Loyola that was so outstanding?
I mean, just one of those types of games with, like, compounding confidence. I don't know if you've ever witnessed this in baseball where you just see, like, you know, three or four home runs in a row, and it just seems like each batter is feeding off the guy that came before him, and at the same time, you know, the pitcher's confidence is derailing at every moment. I thought that Loyola's first three goals were all scored in unsettled situations, and I felt like Towson's defense kind of shrunk up a little bit, and then they won the next three faceoffs and scored on settled goals. Justin Ward posting up on the crease, roll dodge, and then Tyler Albrecht with a step down. And I think that, you know, Loyola has a lot of depth and versatility in terms of guys that can score. Defensively, they're really sound. They're a good team. They answered a lot of the question marks that I think people like me, and I don't know if you it felt like you had these questions about Loyola coming into the season, but, you know, they were just they filled in all their holes really, really well.
Yeah, I didn't know about midfield talent for the Greyhounds. The one thing, though, I get a sense of, like, a new fresh air, you know, like it's a new, like, they hit the reset button, and all the thing with the championship and all the seniors and the pressure, that's gone.
I totally agree, and I think that maybe, you know, one of the feelings that I had in terms of trying to analyze them heading into the season was just not giving enough credit to guys like Joe Fletcher, Justin Moore, Pat Laconi, who I think are setting the right Jack Runkle certainly would be remiss to leave him out, that are setting the right tone for this team. You know, as seniors, I think that they saw the senior leadership on that national championship team and are emulating that, whereas maybe last year I think that there was so much talent in that senior class, there might have been a little bit of neglect paid to the types of things you need to do to prepare yourselves to win.
Michigan beats Detroit as well midweek this week, and as we turn our attention to the weekend, we'll talk later on this podcast about Syracuse and Maryland. Some of the critical games, Albany, Drexel, Cornell, and the Ivy League open up. Cornell, Big Red, hosting Hobart. Denver's got a doubleheader, I believe, this weekend. As you said, the Patriot League, Loyola travels up to Holy Cross. Holy cold, that'll be. the headline games, I think a Penn State-Notre Dame 3 o'clock Saturday is a critical game, and I think everyone was impressed. How much stock do you put into that Notre Dame win?
You know what? Not as little as some people who aren't familiar with Jacksonville and just see Jacksonville as, you know, a relatively recent startup might. You know, I think that against Duke, you saw a good goalie performance out of Pete DeLuca, and, you know, that's something to be mindful of. And I thought that, you know, Notre Dame's ability to get to the goal total that they did, you know, maybe suggested a little bit of what we kind of saw out of Loyola against Towson, just a team that has a robust number of scoring options. And, you know, when you lose, they graduated like 7 midfielders. Now, granted, a fair amount of those guys played defense as well, but that combined with Sean Rogers, who was kind of like their timely goal scorer, you know, they had some offensive holes to fill, even though they had guys coming back. So I think that Notre Dame, you know, who their defensive identity is obviously going to be pretty static year to year, you know, with the exception of when they graduated goalie, which they just did, and you know, got an opportunity to get Connor Kelly some playing time and some under the lights time. You know, I would say that Notre Dame should feel good about that win. They definitely can take a lot away from it.
There's some really important games this weekend. You know, UMass Harvard, it's an out of conference game. We'll talk about the at larges later on in the season. That's a game that's important. Also, Yale St. John's, I think is a critical game. Towson, Georgetown, looks like Georgetown may start getting some momentum. And then the Ohio State Marquette game, I think the Buckeyes now at 0-2 have kind of backed themselves into a corner. Those are all games that are out of conference that have my attention this week. Anything stand out among the games I just mentioned to you, Terry?
Well, the Yale-St. John's game, I totally agree. I mean, I think that these are two teams with similar aspirations. They're teams that, you know, don't necessarily have the strength of schedule to be comfortable on Selection Sunday unless they come very close to running the table. And I think that they're both teams that don't want to have to rely on their conference tournament. I think Yale is almost sick of that. They've won the conference tournament the last 2 years. And St. John's, has had some struggles and has underperformed, you know, most specifically last season in their conference tournament after, I believe, having beaten Notre Dame 2 years ago. So I think that this is the type of win where you can expect the winner to have, at the worst, a top 20 win on their resume over the course of the rest of the season by virtue of this W. You know, but at the same time, I'm not sure how much we know about St. John's given you know, their early season returns. And on the flip side, Yale hasn't played yet. So that's a game that I'm going to pay special attention to and try to find out as much about, given the fact that I won't be able to be there.
On the TV side, you can watch Duke and Penn on Friday night, 7 o'clock on ESPN3. Duke comes back 2 days later and plays Stony Brook on Sunday. ESPNU will be televising the Hofstra at Princeton game, and that is kind of a tone setter for both teams. Hofstra coming off that nasty loss to Marquette. Princeton and Tom Shriver, I have high expectations for the Tiger team. I think they're going to have a good offense. They need to find two or three more players on defense and toughen up those shorties. I just think that they can score goals this year, and they bring back some healthy players who missed at the end of last year. I think Mike McDonald down on the tack sitting on a 50-goal season. I think he had, 42 or 43 last year. There's going to be so much attention paid to those midfielders. He's a guy down low that should be able to capitalize. It's a very dangerous Princeton team, and I consider them and Yale, the two favorites in the Ivy League.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you and I have gone head-to-head on Princeton and how good we think they're going to be on numerous occasions in the offseason. I'm really excited to see what they put on the field because, you know, my reluctance to buy into Princeton as either an Ivy League favorite or a top-10 team is that they have a lot to show, in my opinion. Similar to Syracuse, and with Syracuse, the debate was more about whether or not they were deserving of the number one team. And you know, to date, they've probably demonstrated that they are at that level. But to me, heading into the season, they had a number of transfers, a number of guys that were returning to injury. And I just wanted to see what they looked like on the field. And with Princeton, it's the same. They have a number of guys returning from injury. I counted as many as five who are going to see significant time. In addition to that, you know, they've got a freshman in Will Reynolds who could end up being a cornerstone of that defense. So, I don't doubt Princeton's ceiling. I think that at this point in the season, I'm taking a skeptical approach to what I think they're going to become because there are so many question marks.
Friday, Baltimore Sun and InsideLacrosse.com releasing my top players, Terry, 1 through 25. Which players in the game stand out above the rest? Who the fans should be following? Who's really special? The rankings are very difficult and subjective, obviously. You know, your 25 is going to be different than mine, the players, any order. I think it'll be interesting for lacrosse fans and kind of give them a way to look at the season. I want to go through some of these picks. You want me to start at one or down at the bottom of 25?
Well, no, I'd prefer for you to start at one because I want to. That's where I'm most interested to talk to you about.
Well, I got Lyle Thompson, tackling from Albany. You know, he's impossible to cover. 113 points last year as a junior, 42% shooting. But more than anything, he's just fun to watch. He's kind of a once in a decade type player. He plays with so much style and finesse and flamboyance that he's just enjoyable to watch. He's the type of guy that if you're playing pickup right now in a field with no jerseys on, you can tell who he is. You know, he's just that identifiable by the way he carries the stick.
I totally agree, and I think that's such an important point because I think that, you know, in my time at Inside Lacrosse, probably about the last 6 or 7 years, the transition from the players that had that type of resonance with young lacrosse players has had it's been a torch carrying and a torch passing process. And I, you know, think about a guy like Billy Bitter who resonated so well with young players, or, you know, kind of transitioned into Steele Stanwyck and then most recently Rob Pennell. And Lyle Thompson is such an interesting example of that because playing at Albany, where, you know, kids get so few opportunities to see him play, to have developed this type of persona simply through his style of play, because he's not somebody that's out there, you know, a ton trying to promote himself through social media or anything else, really speaks to exactly how exciting he is to watch. And I think that I agree with you with your perception, and that was the thing. I was almost surprised when we talked about this in your kind of prep list, and you acknowledged that because I don't know. I don't know why I was surprised, but I was pleased to see it.
Two, Tommy Shriver, number one pick for Major League Lacrosse Draft, Ohio Machine, Princeton University, 73 career assists from the midfield, and a lot of tools. Number three would be Jordan Wolf, tackling Duke, 120 goals, 81 assists, career shooting percentage of 35%, which is really good. There are a few defenders who can match his speed. And then number four would be Terry McArdle, attackman St. John's. You know, 3.8 assists per game last season. Nearly four assists per game. That's an impressive number.
And the one thing about that those three guys that stands out to me is how different of players they are. You know, Tom Schreiber is a rare athlete in terms of his combination of strength and speed, whereas Jordan Wolf is just a I don't know. I've never really heard about his 40 time or what he could do on the track, but he strikes me as somebody who's just elite fast. Whereas Kieran McArdle is, in my opinion, and having not gotten to see him play as much as the other two, I'll acknowledge if I'm wrong, and I certainly don't want to undersell his athleticism, but you know, he's a heads up player that's a really good passer that understands the game and his teammates very well, almost in that kind of the way that was associated with you know, the feeding MIAA attackman in the late 80s and early 90s, and I think that there's something to be said for the sport when you look at the diversity of athletic skill set that those three guys have, and yet, you know, they've attained similar levels of success.
Next two guys, heavy indoor, heavy Canadian flair, Wesley Berg, attackman of Denver, right-hander, 56 goals last year, shot 43%. I view him as the most dangerous right-handed mid-range shooter in the college game. And then at number six, and I carry this is the hardest part of this list, Randy Fats, midfield slash attack, Syracuse University, two-time JUCO. Yeah, unimaginable expectations. Can he live up to the hype? Well, he kind of did. What did he have, 7 points against Albany last Sunday?
Yeah, and Randy Fats is a guy that I first met when he was 15 years old. He came down with Brody Merrill's Hill Academy to play a number of games in the early season, and they played Loyola Blakefield when they were coming off of Steel Stanley's junior season, in which they won the MIAA championship, and they beat that Blakefield team, and Stats was a kid that you know, he was just so tall, so athletically bouncy, so personality wise bouncy. It wasn't hard to imagine him being a great player. You know, he's had just a tremendous amount of setbacks in the interim between injuries and some personal issues, and to see him you know, excel to this level. But also, I think it's one thing to get onto the Syracuse roster and make a contribution, but I think the most impressive thing to date is that in a very short period of time, it seems like the coaching staff has been able to find a role for him. You can make the argument that it's easy to find a great player a role, but when he's surrounded by other great players, I would argue that it's not as easy as it might seem, and it's even more important. The stakes are a lot higher because it has the opportunity to disrupt everybody else's role dramatically, and it feels like, to date, Syracuse has found at least something of a right combination upon which to build over the course of the rest of the season.
7 through 10, Joe Fletcher, deep playing Mantis, stalking defender from Loyola, kind of abusive at 8, speed and power, big 35 goals last year for Cornell. Justin Ward, I rank Justin Ward a lot higher than most people do. 31 assists as a sophomore, had 35 assists last season. And then number 10, Mike Cannonchuk, midfield Maryland, off to a really good start this year, 9 points after 2 games, 23 goals last season, got the best wrists, just a vicious snapshot on the run.
Yeah, I don't want to get this off topic, but if I would, I'd start talking about how much Joe Fletcher reminds me of Brody Merrill. But one point on Cannonchuk, I thought that against Mount St. Mary's, Maryland's offensive staff put him down low on attack, and it was because they liked the experience that he was going to bring to the game. You know, there's a lot of similarities in background and the fact that they both started at Princeton between Schreiber and Cannonchuk, and I think one of the similarities that's easy to identify is how well each understands the game, and I think that Cannonchuk will be a huge asset to Maryland as he is flanked by so many inexperienced players to kind of help permeate that throughout.
11 through 14, Joey Sankey comes in at 11. Peter can play at such a fast, relentless pace. Nice numbers last year with 56 points. 12 is Austin Couch, goalie Penn State. I think on his good days he's the best, but too often he has mediocre days, as you saw against Loyola in the home loss. Jesse King, midfield, Ohio State, comes in at 13, 55 points as a sophomore. Going to be hard for him this year, you know, because he's going to draw so much attention, but he certainly got off to a great start against Hopkins. And then 14, another Canadian, and that's a strong team here. Chad Cutton, midfield, North Carolina. He's got a goal or a point in 26 of his last 27 games. Lefty, he's durable, 28 goals last season. I think he's going to be a star this year.
I can't argue with any of those picks. I mean, Austin Cout is a goalie who I think, to your point, you know, when he's at his best, he's very difficult to beat. One of the interesting things about him is that his numbers reflect consistency, but like you say, you know, he is prone to not playing well all the time, and I think that that is, you know, the call to get to over the course of the rest of his senior season, and particularly as Penn State has such a low margin of error because they can't qualify for the CAAQ, it becomes even more important for him to play well consistently.
15, Kevin Rice, attackman, Syracuse, a little featherweight, 5'8". I just love this guy's game. I think he's highly, highly underrated. Miles Thompson comes in at 16, 73 points a year ago. He only played 12 games, remember. He didn't play all the full games last year. This guy can score in any kind of situation, especially in tight. Nico Amato, goalie Maryland, at 17. A lot of career wins. He's got 37 career wins. Had a terrific 58%. He played for two national titles. And then John LoCascio, defensive midfielder from Nova, just a production machine. Fierce competitor, tons and tons of ground balls across turnovers at number 18.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the point that you make about Miles Thompson is important. That is that, you know, his averages are more reflective of his play than his totals because of, you know, how injured he was last season. And I would point out that those were not the soft tissue injuries that you could use to qualify a guy as injury prone. I mean, he broke his hand, I believe, and had another, you know, similar type of issue. If Miles Thompson is healthy throughout the course of this season, he would be the guy that is picked in this range that I think could be, you know, in a top. He could be number one by the end of the season, depending on how things unfold for him.
Four straight attackmen up next at 19. John DeGlesner, correct, at Armony?
Yeah, that's right, although he did play a little bit of midfield in their game against UMass. So, you know, came into Army as a midi, converted to attack. Sounds like, you know, there's a possibility that he could be playing a little bit of both this season.
4.4 points a game last year. Really good size, West Jenny. Well, Stanley coming in at number 20, which is, I got to tell you, 47 points a year ago. He's got 10 assists after two games this year. He just abuses opposing defenders with his wit and his IQ and his cunning around the crease. Brandon Mangan, attack Yale, kind of a guy who's flown under the radar his entire career, was a very successful high school player on Long Island. 64 points last year. And then Matt Cavanaugh, attackman from Notre Dame. I thought he looked really good the other day. He's really strong and fearless at 5'8". You know, he just flies through the crease. He's very, I love him. When he makes a decision, there's no halfway. It's go.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, what you kind of, and I want to group Stanwyck, Mangan, and Kavanaugh together because even though what they do is so different and you know, their body types and their athleticism are so different, one of the unifying factors is that you can sense that the thing that differentiates them from less successful players is that they are so willing to find a way to get whatever it needs to get done, and they're really willing to sacrifice themselves in order to do so, whether that's physically or, you know, mentally given, you know, point production and stuff like that. You know, With Stanwyck, I mean, he's like constantly on the ground getting slid to and then, you know, throwing a pass through the defense. With Mangan, he's always getting that lift trying to get his question mark up, and he ends up on the ground after his shot ends up in the back of the net. And then Kavanaugh, I mean, to your point, he's always getting pushed off his spots, but he's a guy who I picture him putting his head down and running at the goal, only lifting up his head when he realizes it's time to make something happen with a feed or a shot.
We have three guys on the list, 23 through 25. Ryan Creighton, defensive midfield / midfielder, North Carolina. This guy can do it all. 11 goals last season. A leader on the field, communicator, coach of the defense. He's a complete player. He's not a specialist. It'll be interesting to see what type of season he has. I love the kid. I think he's the heart and soul of that team. 24, Shane Sturgis. Again, very underrated. 44 points last spring. He's never the most athletic guy. Big IQ, skills, and effort. He's really the leader of the Penn State offense. And then 25 would be Stephen O'Hara, defender from Notre Dame. You know, Notre Dame, it's always tough. You know, are they system guys? Are they really good players? Last 3 years, they're 25-8 with O'Hara starting. He's played in, 33 straight games. This guy can cover. He's terrific as a double man. And he's just good off ball in his spacing, and he's got to be respected as a candidate for first team All American, and so he comes in at 25.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that has progressed in his role in the Notre Dame defense from being the interior guy to the ground ball guy, and now being kind of the elite cover guy. It'll be really interesting to see what type of small changes the Notre Dame defensive identity takes with a guy with his skill set, you know, kind of coordinating things.
and the guys who didn't make the list, who are very, you know, James Pinnell of Virginia, Jeremy Noble, Gorn Murray, and Michael Earhart of Maryland. Those were kind of my next up guys.
Can't dispute either of them. I mean, Gorn Murray is the type of player. One of the things that was most interesting to me about the choices that the Maryland coaching staff made in the offseason was the willingness to move Mike Earhart to long stick mid after he had been such a good cover defenseman last season. And to me, it suggests that they are really confident in Gorn Murray covering number one guys, because, you know, he strikes me as faster and smaller, that it would have made more sense for him to play long stick midi. They suggested that it was Earhart's ability to play in space, his understanding of the game, that kind of was the deciding factor there. But it certainly had something to, it had to have had something to do with what they think Murray can do as a number one lockdown guy.
And look across the ACC, though. You know, the ACC is a conference defined by big athletic midfielders. When you go up to Syracuse, who's going to cover Randy Stats or Scott Loy? When you go down to Duke, who's going to body up a Miles Jones? When you go to Carolina, Chad Cutton's going to lean in on you. So a guy like Matt Pons, who's a freshman pole from Maryland, is a nice player, going to be a really good player. But in no way does he have the body type to match up with ACC caliber midfielders.
Well, and to that point, you also have really small ex-attackmen, whether it's Kevin Rice or Jordan Wolf or Matt Kavanaugh, so it makes sense for Murray to match up with them down low.
Ah, nice, touche. Small on attack, big at the midfield.
There
you discover the trend.
And on that note, let's talk to Kevin Rice. The Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Kevin Rice, attackman, Syracuse Orange, coming off of a thrilling 17-16 overtime victory against Albany in a classic in the Carrier Dome. And Kevin, this is a game that I think, you know, your coach talked about it, Coach Marr talked about it post-game. It's developed an identity. You know, it was always an upstate matchup. Now it's an upstate showdown that features two high-powered offenses against one another. And you were a key catalyst to a Syracuse team that was able to get one goal ahead of its opponent. Just looking back real quick, understanding that you guys have probably turned your attention forward, what was it like to be a part of that game?
It was an exciting game to be a part of, especially as an offensive player. You know, it was played the way the game should be. It was up and down and back and forth. You know, a couple times I thought we had sort of finished them off with four or five goal runs, but, you know, they did a great job of bouncing back and making it close at the end.
And to that end, you know, I'm curious as to how you identify your role on this team this season, because, you know, obviously last year I think it would be fair to describe you as a relatively traditional ex-attackman, a guy who had, you know, kind of a expectation for 50-50 scoring, feeding, and facilitating. But things, you know, with the influx of talent this season have changed a little bit, I would imagine. How have you seen it come to fruition over the course of these first two games in terms of what you think your role is in comparison to last year?
You know, I think what actually makes our offense as good as we are right now is that we don't really have, you know, set defined roles. You know, depending on what the other team is trying to do to us, you know, we can adjust because, you know, we have talent at pretty much every spot. So, you know, against Siena, they were, you know, playing pretty loose behind and, you know, so had a lot of feeding opportunities, whereas, you know, Albany was shutting off behind when our middies had the ball. So, you know, it opened up a lot of opportunities for middies up top to dodge without a two slide or even a primary slide sometimes. So I think, you know, we don't really have, you know, set defined roles. It's just sort of, you know, depending on what the other team's doing, you know, certain guys step up on certain days.
That being said, your numbers to date are one goal and an impressive 10 assists in two games. And I think that that puts you in a pretty unique position to talk about some of the other guys surrounding you that you're trying to set up. You know, and I think a lot of fans hopefully had an opportunity to see you guys last year and are familiar with guys like Dylan Donahue and Scott Loy and Henry Schoonmaker. But with Randy Stats in particular, you know, an OCC transfer who I think lacrosse fans have been familiar with for a while, what's it been like incorporating him into the offense so far?
Yeah, it's definitely been a process. Obviously, anytime you bring in a new guy mid-year, you know, it takes a little bit to just adjust everyone's games to, you know, figuring out what he likes to do and what spots he likes to get to on the field. But, you know, Randy's a great lacrosse player, obviously, and, you know, he's a very smart lacrosse player as well, so he's fit in pretty seamlessly. And, you know, for me as a feeder, it's been nice because, you know, he pretty much catches everything. So, you know, it's just been an adjustment of trying to figure out what spots on the field he wants the ball at.
And not to belabor the point, but you know, we've spent a fair amount of time talking about your style of play, and one of the things that I'm curious about is a trend that I'm seeing in college lacrosse where, you know, you don't tend to see that many, 5'8", 170-pound midfielders, but you do, and particularly in the ACC, we've seen a lot of quote-unquote smaller guys being very successful at attack. How do you define your style of play as it relates to your stature and the way that you've maybe you use your height and weight to an advantage and the ways in which you've found an opportunity to overcome what you might be able to do if you were a bigger player?
For me, I've never been, the biggest guy on the field for any of the sports I've played growing up either, so I've had to play with this my whole life, so it hasn't really been too much of an adjustment. But I think, it's almost beneficial for attackmen. As you said, there's a lot of small guys in the ACC right now because, the defenders are so big and weigh a lot, and so it's harder for them to sort of change directions with us because, we can sort of stop our momentum a little bit easier than they can. So I think just even that is, for me, a way that I can clear my hands and get some sight lines on cutters.
And is that the most important part of your game, the ability to create separation, to get your hands free, to be able to deliver a pass?
I think so, especially, with the fact that we have so much depth. It's, no one, we don't need one guy to be, dodging for three goals every game, We just need to all play within ourselves, and for me, that's creating opportunities for other people.
Kevin, your prowess, in the classroom is pretty well documented. You were a Big East All-Academic team member last year, and you won the NCAA's Elite 89 Award, honored at the Final Four for that achievement. I don't know how to ask this question in a way that doesn't sound really dumb, so I'm just going to ask it in a way that sounds really dumb. How does what you're able to accomplish what makes you a good student translate to what you bring to the field that has helped to make you a successful lacrosse player?
I think it does in a few ways. Obviously, preparation is a big part of what we do. We watch film, pretty much every day in the week leading up to a game, and just trying to analyze what sort of, things we can do to the other team's defense, what their slide packages are. Coach gives us our likely matchups, and, so just a little bit more in particular about which guy we think will be covering us and, what their strengths and weaknesses are. I think it's more of that than anything else.
Turning your attention forward, coming up, opening up ACC play as the Maryland Terrapins come to town. I know that you guys have scrimmaged Maryland in the past, but this is likely going to be a very interesting matchup insofar as it'll be probably a one-year deal as Maryland leaves the ACC next year. I know that it's not a player's job to talk about the big picture, but at the same time, I would imagine that, growing up in Central New York, you're probably grew up a Cuse fan, and as a result, have a little bit of a perspective on what a game like this means. What are your thoughts on what a game like this means?
Obviously, it's important. Maryland's been a traditional lacrosse power, and, they knocked Syracuse out of the tournament when Galloway and those guys were seniors, so obviously there's some history there between the teams, and it's a big game for ACC purposes also. Only four of the six teams get to make the ACC tournament, and it's never too early to start, racking up some quality wins and some stuff that'll be good moving forward for the NCAA tournament.
And as you look, more directly at the team on the field, certainly their defensive identity is a little bit better known than their offensive identity with guys like Michael Earhart, who's made the transition to long stick midfield, it looks like, this season after being a lockdown defenseman last year. Goran Murray, who is a well-known quantity at the defensive end, starting since his freshman season. I would assume that that'll probably be the matchup that you'll see. And then Nico Amato, a goalie who, has obviously been on the biggest stage multiple times. What are your thoughts on what you expect to see from the Maryland defense?
We know that they're very experienced and very talented. They're big athletic guys, and they've been, like you said, most of their starters have been there for 2-3 years, so we know that they're proven quantities, and it's a little bit of a role reversal from last week where our defense had to stop some offensive players that have been doing great things on the D1 level for years. So I think as an offense, we just need to really focus on execution and focus on getting up some goals for our defense.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, we really want to thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck this weekend against the Terps, and good luck going forward as you guys continue to move through the ACC schedule.
All right. Thank you.
One of the big storylines of college lacrosse this season, ACC, the addition of Notre Dame and Syracuse, and that conference starts action this weekend as Maryland heads up to the Carrier Dome to play a Syracuse team coming off a one-goal win over Albany. Terry, this is a game, you know, when I look at Syracuse joining the ACC, I think from a strategic standpoint, this may be their most challenging matchup. When you look at it, they've played Notre Dame. They know Notre Dame. They've played Virginia in the past. I think Virginia and Carolina have similar styles. They know Duke, having played them in the national championship game. But Maryland presents a couple things that Syracuse could struggle with. Number one is faceoffs, Charlie Raffa. Number two is between the pipes with Nico Amato. And Maryland plays defense. And so this is going to be a little bit more of a challenge. Even though Maryland's young, I'm just giving the Terps a little shot and putting Cuse on upset alert, believe it or not.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but you're right. I mean, definitely a team that they're least familiar with, although they do have the scrimmage history, but my guess is that you're going to say that isn't that valuable, and I tend to agree with it. The thought that I had about the identity of this game, and I wouldn't necessarily give it an advantage to either team, is just that of the six ACC teams this year, these are the two that have probably the most similar identities, not necessarily in terms of style of play, almost certainly not, but more so in terms of the makeup of the roster. They tend to be, similarly disparate in recruiting profile. Maryland and Syracuse get kids from all over the country. Public schools with similar types of academic standards. And, you know, that was kind of the way that I was approaching it. I think that this is a matchup of two teams that have relatively similar mindsets among the six that play in the ACC. But as it relates to, you know, the specific outcome, one of the things that's the hallmark of this game is that it's so early in the season. And I think that Syracuse, having had the opportunity to play a top 10, top 15 quality team in Albany, that maybe counteracts the advantage that you just spoke to, which is, you know, Maryland's matchup opportunity, given the fact that Maryland hasn't really been tested so far with games just against Mount St. Mary and UMBC.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Syracuse is a favorite in this ball game. Two goals, 2.5 goals, 3 goals. Maryland's got all that youth. It's a difficult place to step out and play your first big college lacrosse game. But just from a strategic standpoint, I think Maryland's going to present some challenges. You know, that Albany game, that's a track meet. This game will not be a track meet, and it's going to ask Syracuse to be maybe a little more efficient with the ball. Going to ask them to dig in a little more on defense. They're giving up goals, and that's my biggest concern, the lack of faceoffs, goaltending, and some nice players on defense, but I don't like their shorties, and I don't think they play enough. So I'm my thought is that Cuse wins this, but this is an opportunity for Maryland because absolutely no pressure on their shoulders, and then you carry them.
No, and that's a really key component of it. But one of the things that I'm most interested in, this is a weekend in which Patriot League play gets underway as well. So the fact that this is kind of the first foray of this ACC component to the 2014 season that is on the, you know, we thought it was such a big deal that we made it the storyline for the cover of our March issue of the magazine, is just that, you know, everybody is bemoaning the early start to the season, and certainly there are a lot of valid points to that argument. But one of the key factors that I think people are not necessarily paying as much attention to is how important conference play is in comparison to 5 years ago as it relates to a team's hopes for the NCAA tournament. And the ACC is the conference in which that is a little bit of an exception. They also play some of their games earlier in the season and not everybody plays late in the season. It's just a really bizarre dynamic. And then when you throw in the fact that Maryland is out of the ACC after this season, this game is emblematic of so much of the tumult that is going to be the hallmark of this conference this year, and I think it's a really exciting opportunity to get underway.
Yeah, it's rare when you look across college sports that you play league games so early in the season. Occasionally in college football, we'll see an opening weekend, South Carolina or Texas A&M will play a league game. But for the most part, those first 3 or 4 weeks of the season are out of conference play. Same with college basketball. This is kind of unique that these lacrosse teams now in week 2 or 3 are playing league games. You mentioned, with 10 automatic qualifiers, obviously the league tournaments are critical. How many ACC teams are involved in the 8 at-larges? 2, 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there. Probably more than 2, obviously. But it's interesting, with league play starting so early. And, is there an advantage north-south this year in terms of weather? I don't think so. I think it was bad for everybody. The teams with indoor facilities are the ones who theoretically should be ahead of the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think anybody's benefiting from the weather.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast continues. We welcome in Tom Schreiber, midfielder, Princeton University. My Friday column this week, I ranked the top players in the country, 1 through 25, and Tom comes in as the number two player in the country behind Lyle Thompson, midfielder, Princeton, 73 career assists. Tom, welcome in. I want to go back to last summer. You had the opportunity to try out for Team USA as a collegiate. What was the kind of the takeaway, or what were the positives of that experience for you?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on. But a lot, you know, it was a whole new level of play in terms of the talent, the speed, and the size. So I think just getting a taste of that before the college season is something that really helped, and just becoming smarter as a player. You know, my whole college career, I've kind of been slid to quickly, so I've been used to getting the ball out, and then in a tryout atmosphere, I didn't really see too many slides, and I probably forced a couple shots. So just, I guess, developing as a player and making smarter decisions is my takeaway, and then obviously just valuable experience playing with such a high-caliber group of guys.
And that was kind of where I wanted to go with it because, you know, one of the interesting transitions as it relates to this Princeton team is the transition that you'll undergo being a senior. And obviously you've been in a leadership role because of your role on the team and the contributions that you've brought to the field. But now I think every senior understands the sense of urgency with their career kind of winding down in a different way. But you are coming off of a summer in which you had an opportunity to play with guys who had accomplished, I think, a lot of what you're hoping to accomplish this senior season. From the fall through now, how's it been kind of stepping up in whatever capacity that you have as your team has kind of filled out its identity over the course of the last couple months?
Well, it's been a fun experience just because we have a huge senior class. Right? I think we have 14 guys, and it's kind of been a group effort in terms of leadership. But yeah, I mean, like you said, just playing alongside those guys, you kind of see the attitude that they have. And at a place like Princeton, you're surrounded by guys who have gone all the way and played in Final Fours three out of the four of their years at Princeton. So I guess just looking to them and you know, looking for advice in terms of motivating the team and being good leaders. But like I said, it's really been a group thing so far, and we're definitely feeling that sense of urgency, and we're more than excited to get out there for real. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Tom, what's it like competing in the Ivy League and having to kind of sit things out, you know, captain's practices in January and then watching other teams maybe with two or three games under their belt? What's that like?
It's definitely a little different because, you know, the lacrosse world is so small. You talk to a lot of other guys that started practice 2-3 weeks before us. But at the same time, we start our games later than everyone else, so I don't really see a huge disadvantage. But we also, you hear these calls to push the season back, and our season is further back than a lot of people, so I almost look at it as an advantage. Now I've been here, I've played 3 opening days, and I've never really felt our team wasn't prepared. So it's definitely different, and I think we're definitely at a disadvantage not being able to practice with our coaches. But I think we've been more than prepared, and I think it's almost an advantage for us just because we're not out there in the snow in the middle of January with our whole team. We're usually inside playing some box or something like that, so just trying to develop as a team together without the coaching staff and, you know, get some work in that way.
Tom, you mentioned the coaching staff, new additions under Coach Chris Bates, John Walker, Matt Madelon, and Brad Conlon as the assistants. What's it been like working with them?
It's been great. I mean, I have nothing but positive things to say about them. We couldn't be happier with them. And I think it almost brought our team closer together just because a lot of guys are trying to get to know a new staff. And again, going back to the Ivy League rules, we're only together as a team 10 times throughout the whole fall. So to kind of speed up the building a relationship with a new coaching staff, we had guys up in the office just hanging out or talking film or you know, talking about X's and O's. So I think it actually helped us kind of develop as a team just because we were able to make the extra effort to get to know the staff. And so far, while we're here in the spring, these guys have been doing a great job, and we couldn't be happier.
Princeton had a really good offense last year, only held to single digits twice all season, put up really nice totals, you know, 11 against Hopkins, 14 against Villanova, 15 against Carolina, 12 against Syracuse. during practice so far, Tom, what do you think is going to be the strength of this offense, and what style are we likely to see from you guys this year?
Well, Coach gives us a lot of freedom on our end, just with all the picks and the two-man games. I think you'll continue to see a lot of that. but I think something that's changed from last year is just we have a little more depth now with a couple of guys that were out last year, with Tucker Shanley, Forrest Sonnenfeld, Will Himmler, are all back now. Them combined with a mix of some pretty talented freshmen, I think we're just a little deeper. I think last year our first six could have ran with anybody, but we ran into some issues towards the end of games and towards the end of the season. We kind of burnt out a little bit. This year, I think with the increase in depth, we'll be in a little better shape, and we'll be able to go to that second line a little more. We'll be able to sub some guys in on attack through the midfield. I think we'll just have some more options and some more talent around the field.
Tom, you've kind of developed an interesting, you know, opening game rivalry with Hofstra, and it doesn't necessarily seem like a natural rivalry, but you know, it has been your season opener during your career at Princeton. You're 2-1 against the Pride, and they're coming off of a somewhat surprising loss against Marquette. What are your thoughts on Hofstra?
I mean, they look pretty good on film. You know, being from Long Island, I've definitely seen more Hofstra games than I've seen any other team play. And I know that they're a tough group of guys year in and year out. I know Coach Tierney does a good job, and I'm sure they'll be more than ready coming off a surprising loss. So, I mean, we're expecting a very competitive game, and you know, like I said before, we're just excited to get out there for real to end the preseason and start playing some games.
Is there a teammate, Tom, that you're excited to see play in a game situation? Maybe a guy who is playing really well right now that may surprise some people?
No, I'm sorry, I missed the first part of the question.
Is there a teammate of yours that's playing really well right now in practice that you know, may jump up this season and surprise some people? Who are you looking forward to seeing actually perform on game day this year on your team?
Will Reynolds is the first guy that comes to mind. He's a freshman, you know, pretty highly recruited guy out of Del Barton. He's just got all the tools necessary to be a great defenseman. He's already got a presence down low, which is pretty rare for a freshman. He's fast, he's strong, he picks up the ball well, he covers well, clears well. He's just an all-around very, very solid player, and I'm excited to see how he does in the real games. So I definitely go with him.
Tom, you talked about Quint Letoff, with, you know, kind of all of the well-rounded accomplishments that you've developed to this point in your career. And it's interesting to me because when I talk to people about your style of play, one of the things that is the most immediately mentioned is the versatility. People talk about the combination of size, speed, strength, the ability to play with both hands, the ability to be an equal threat, passing and shooting. I understand that that's been the goal of your player development. You've tried to develop into a player that can say all of those things. But if there's one aspect of your game that you think is the key to unlocking all of the rest of the aspects of your game, what would you say that it is?
I'd probably say just being able to draw a slide. It's something I've worked on a lot, just because it just being the first guy and drawing another one is just the basic premise of an offense. So I would say that, and then once that slide comes, I guess the guy has to decide whether he's going to prevent the shot or make me move the ball on. And I think, you know, the ability to do both is something that's pretty helpful to an offense. So I would just say breaking down the first defender. And you know, it's something that I'm trying to continue to develop. As Quint said before, at the Team USA tryout, it's a whole new level. So I'm just trying to continue to develop all of those skills and see where it takes me.
Do you guys talk about team goals or have a motto or kind of a team statement for this year?
We actually had a team meeting about it, trying to determine kind of what our motto was going to be. And we talked about it probably for a half hour, and we got a lot of great ideas. And then one of our senior captains, Derek Raby, got up, and I thought he said something that was pretty awesome. He got up and said, why don't we let our play define our motto? So it's something that we're going to try to develop throughout the year. And it goes hand-in-hand with something coaches been trying to instill on us, is that we have to peak at the right time. In years past, we've had a big win earlier in the season, and we've had a pretty bad loss at the end. So, I mean, developing our goals throughout the year, I think, is something that will help us kind of peak at the right time and not burn out towards the end.
Tom Schreiber, thank you so much for your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. We appreciate it. Good luck this weekend against Hofstra and throughout the rest of the year, particularly as you guys get going into your Ivy League schedule.
Well, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Easy game. Big game for you. Get it started.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse podcast continues. We head out to South Bend, Indiana. Notre Dame. We're bringing Jim Marlott, midfielder. Scored a beautiful goal last week on TV against Jacksonville. Jim, first of all, welcome to the season. And how do you best describe what your off season was like? Maybe last fall and into this winter.
Hey, Quinn, thanks a lot for having me on. That was a pretty goal. Not too many people believe I meant to do that. As far as the off season, I think last year was frustrating. Second half of the season, losing to Syracuse twice is never easy. We had a good game against Duke, who went on to win it all. So that just really gave us some motivation. I think me personally focused a lot about stepping into a leadership role as a senior this year. And then really just trying to, get this group together and really have fun. I think that was our major focus throughout the fall and the spring, is just getting back to enjoying lacrosse and having fun and kind of flying around out there on the field.
Jim, I got an opportunity to see you guys out in Colorado, both your indoor opportunity to kind of learn the ropes a little bit of box lacrosse, and then also which seemed really fun, and then a scrimmage against Air Force, which seemed not as much fun. What was the goal with the indoor? Was to take it back to South Bend and play through the off season. How'd that go, and what do you feel like you guys benefited from?
Yeah, playing box in the off season was a lot of fun. A couple times the coaches were there, sometimes they weren't, and that got really chippy. And it was good. It was just kind of that competitive nature, still playing lacrosse in the off season, but it's not the same thing. Working on the two-man action, working on your hands in close. I think there's a lot of little things in those games that we can translate onto the big field. So that was great in the off season. It was just a way to kind of have fun, be competitive, but also learn some new stuff.
Nice win last week over Jacksonville, and get things started. Now you guys go through really a gauntlet of quality opponents, one after the other after the other. It's just one of the tougher stretches in the schedule that I've ever seen. But let's go back to Florida last weekend. What was the most significant takeaway in your eyes?
I think just having 13 different players contribute, something a lot of people highlighted on after the game. I think that's really important for us. I think not having just one guy that you can shut down. I mean, Kavanaugh's obviously sensational. Doyle, our freshman Sergio is great as well. But just having everyone and scoring in a lot of different ways. We scored on 6-on-6. We scored on face-offs. We scored in transition. We scored unsettled. Man up, we were 3-for-3. So if we can continue scoring with a lot of different people and in a lot of different ways, it's going to be tough to scout against us.
I want to follow up on Sergio in particular, because when I saw him play, he really stood out. He's tall, he's fast, and what impressed me the most is that your coaching staff let him play defense, and for a freshman midfielder to try to step into your defensive scheme in the fall struck me as being a pretty tall order. What are your thoughts on how it's been to be a line mate of his?
Yeah, playing with him has been it's been special. The kid's a stud. Should be playing D1 football somewhere, but I'm glad he's on my line. As a senior, I really tried to help him kind of come along in the fall, but I can't be too strict with him because he's bigger than me. But he's been great. He's a very smart player, big, strong, fast, great shot. Defense, yeah, that is what can keep people off the field. If you're a defensive liability, it's tough to play on our team. So the fact that he's earned that is definitely a lot to his character and work ethic.
Jim, how do you best characterize the excitement level behind Notre Dame lacrosse right now heading into the ACC?
I think it's awesome. I think we're excited to be in the best conference in lacrosse. I don't think it's too different. We've played ACC teams in the past. We've had hard schedules in the past. Last year our schedule was very tough, and this year it's no different. So I don't think it's as huge change as some people are expecting, but it's very exciting, and we're glad to be a part of it.
Jim, I was talking to Bill Tierney about Penn State after they were coming off of their scrimmage against Johns Hopkins, and he called Penn State maybe the most underrated team in college lacrosse. And, you know, obviously you guys played an unbelievably memorable game with them last year. They're coming off of a pretty disappointing result against Loyola. What are your thoughts on this matchup and kind of what weight it carries for both teams?
I think Penn State's a great team. I think they're very similar to us. We got stuck in Florida after our Jacksonville game and haven't been able to practice too much, but we've been watching a lot of film and been looking at the scout, and they're very similar to us. They're you know, kind of constant pressure offense. They're gonna try to score in those first 5 seconds in transition. That you can really never relax against this team. It's something that we've tried to do. They work extremely hard off ball, setting picks, either on the ball or off ball, cutting. So they do things that, you know, we would like to do, and we can definitely, you know, take note of that. But our defense is prepared to play a style like that, so I think it's going to be a great game. I mean, 2 years ago we lost by one to them in a 4-3 lacrosse game, which is a little crazy. And then last year, unbelievable overtime game. So there's no doubt it's going to be a close game, and we're looking forward to it. I think they have a lot on the line as well without being able to win their conference. They need every big game they can get to get into the tournament. So like all teams we play, we know they're going to be giving us their best.
What's the next step for you in terms of your development, your production, and your success on the field?
I think my leadership right now is really what I'm focusing on, as well as kind of getting back to the basics. I think you know, what really got me recruited and what gave me early success was working really hard off ball. And I think kind of being the main guy, the main middie on this team last year, I felt like I needed to dodge a lot more. And I think I just need to get back to my roots, get back to cutting hard and shooting off ball, and you know, just, you know, making everyone else better around me, making Sergio the best player he can be, as well as all our attackmen and middies.
One of the you know, components to that, I think, and Quinn and I talked about this a couple minutes ago, as it related to Steve O'Hara. You know, I think that Notre Dame is a program known for its defensive identity, and I think that the question marks in the legacy have kind of only significantly arisen when there's been a torch passing in goal, and that's what's, you know, happened in this year with Connor Kelly taking over for the graduated John Kemp. And I think that, you know, Steve is going to be looked at as a guy to help ease that transition and make it as easy as possible. And I know that, you know, Notre Dame, you guys practice as units, and you practice, I'm sure that you guys spend a fair amount of time with the defense as well. But from your perspective, what do you think of the job Steve's done in terms of helping to continue what Notre Dame's defense has developed over the course of his time in South Bend and prior to that?
I think Steve's the best defenseman in the country. You know, he's not the flashiest takeaway guy or the greatest cover guy, but what he does for our team defense is unbelievable. He covers up so many mistakes and prevents so many mistakes in practice all week. You know, really holding guys accountable. I think that's his greatest strength. You know, he does it the right way, and everyone else has got to follow suit. If anyone has any questions, you go to Jerry Byrne, you go to Steve O'Hara, and I think that says a lot. He's a great player, and he's going to help us out. You know, our defense kind of goes as he goes. He's our leader, and we're just going to follow him.
I believe Notre Dame's first TV game is Sunday, March 16th, hosting Virginia. I think it's a 5 o'clock start or a later afternoon start. And one of the things I love, Jim, about covering the Fighting Irish, you guys have real personalities. There are some other teams that come across as kind of bland sometimes in person, guys who are afraid to show their personalities. You guys are smart, funny, and very, very engaging as a group. How would you describe this year's rendition of the Fighting Irish lacrosse team in terms of personality?
I think we're a fun group of guys, and I think last year became a little bit of a grind as we struggled in the second half. And you know, part of it's just who we are, and part of it's a focus that we've made important, which is just to have fun and enjoy our time together. Playing lacrosse at Notre Dame is an unbelievable opportunity that a lot of us take for granted. You know, you only have 4 years, or if you're lucky enough like me, you might have 5. But we just need to enjoy every second. If not winning the national championship makes the season a failure, then there's a lot of teams that are failures. So not that we don't want to, and that is what we're going to hopefully do, but we just need to enjoy every single second and have fun every single second and get better. So I think it's just a fun group to be around, a group that loves lacrosse, and it should be a fun year.
Jim, you mentioned something there that that I wanted to touch on, which is that you know, your redshirt season, I think it caught some members of the media. I also think that it caught some MLL people associated with the MLL off guard. I think you know, didn't quite realize that you had another year of eligibility with intention of playing in 2015 at Notre Dame. I suppose, you know, as it relates to being a natural senior, but also realizing that, you know, you still have another year left. What's your approach to I guess, you know, continuing to get better as well as, you know, leading this team alongside the rest of your classmates?
Yeah, it's definitely a unique opportunity to come back and to know you're coming back going into your senior year. But every team's different. Every year is different. I'm really not focused about next year when that comes. You know, we will be, but it's a whole new team next year. We'll have a whole new group of freshmen. We'll lose a whole group of guys. So I'm not going to, you know, change how I'm acting this year, you know. You know, I'm a captain of the team this year. I'm going to be a leader of this team this year. If things are different next year, they're different. But, you know, like I said, you only get 4 years, so you can't get worried about the whole process. I'm just, you know, all in on this year, and we'll worry about next year. So, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. I mean, I want to stay in college as long as I can, so it's an easy decision. But I'm focused on this year.
Penn State is next for Notre Dame. Give me one key offensively and one key defensively for the Fighting Irish to walk away with a W.
I think one key offensively is shooting. I think he's a great goalie. 2 years ago, it was a 4-3 game, so that kind of shows you what he's capable of. Not being afraid to shoot. I think we outshot Jacksonville by a ton and had some really great shots. But, you know, putting the shots on net that need to go on net. When you have a 10-yard shot, you got to make the goal and make a save. You can't be scared and try to put it in the corner. So I think shooting's key, something we've really focused on. And then defensively, just being focused throughout the entire possession. They clear the ball extremely fast. They attack out of transition. They attack out of face-offs. And then they settle into their 6-on-6. There's no point where you can kind of relax and stand up and wait for them to get their subs on. They're attacking throughout the possession, so we need to be dialed in the whole time.
Jim Marlott, Notre Dame midfielder, we appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Good luck this weekend against Penn State, and continued success as you guys enter what is only able to be described as a grind of an ACC schedule subsequent to the Nittany Lions.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
I want to thank you for listening. We really appreciate your support of this Inside Lacrosse podcast. For Terry, I'm Quint. Keep in mind, we are always looking for ways for the fans to get involved. Please send us, whether it's an email, quint@insidelacrosse.com or tfoy@insidelacrosse.com or communication on Twitter. We welcome all of your interactions, and we want to make this as fun and as productive for the fan at home. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll hear from you again next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.